What is up, Pels fans? Welcome back to the Pelican Debrief podcast. My name is Preston Ellis. You can follow me at Preston Ellis on Twitter, and I'm so appreciative of you guys joining us. Now, before we go any further, I want to give a big high five to the Bird Rights and Ali Cassell. Such a good friend to the program, such a good guy, such a good writer, big fan of his, and he let me borrow one of his great contributors, Kevin Berrios, today. Is going to give us some great firsthand knowledge of the Pelicans, their plans going forward, as well as some of his analysis as to what they should be targeting in free agency, which is just a week away. The NBA has done such a great job of cultivating a real 12-month sport to these exciting trades that we've got going on, from D'Angelo Russell to Jimmy Butler. The excitement never really stops, no matter what time of year it is. So we've got a lot of that coming forward. Coming up next month, we've got the Orlando Summer League. I'm based in Orlando, so I'm going to try to get some credentials and attend some of these workouts, see some of our boys, Cheick Diallo, Peter Jokic, Axel Tupan, Quinn Cook. And if I do get that privilege, I will be reporting daily from Orlando Summer League. But for right now, we're going to bring Kevin on. You guys, it's time to phone a friend. And now we welcome onto the line Kevin Berrios from the Bird Rights. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm so good, man. Thank you so much for taking the time, you guys. We are big fans of the Bird Rights here at Pelican Debrief. Now, you can follow Kevin at Kevin B4Bounce. That's F-O-R, not the numeral. Kevin, take us through your experiences as a Pelicans fan. What drummed up your interest in the Pelicans, and how did you come to write for the Bird Rights?
Well, I'm from New Orleans, a huge basketball fan. So initially, when I first got into basketball, it was the Jason Williams, Chris Webber-led Sacramento Kings. We didn't have a team here at the time. So that's the team that really got me really, really into basketball, because I grew up a skateboarder. I wasn't really a sports guy. But that team was so innovative and interesting. It kind of reminded me of skateboarding in a way. And then from there, just kind of my love for the game just grew. And then once we got the Charlotte Hornets here, I was just hooked and tried to go to as many games as I could. And I moved away for a little while, but when I came back in 2010, I've, either had a season ticket package, partial package, or a full package since. So as far as writing for the Bird Rights, I just was always looking for new news on basketball, especially the Pelicans, because there's not, or the Hornets at the time, but there wasn't much out there. And I found these guys, started commenting on posts, and then they asked for new writers and threw my hat in the ring, and they took me in. So I've been doing that for a couple of years now. Been fun.
Yeah, I'm so glad you did, man. I love your work. I love checking out the Bird Rights every day. You guys are always flinging really great content. So thank you for your work. Thank you again for being on the show. Not to bore our listeners, but tell me about a bit about where you used to board. I'm from City Park myself.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Where did you used to skateboard in New Orleans?
Oh, yeah, all over. I started skating when I was like 8, and I had to stop when I was about 28 because my knees were getting so bad. But where Harris Casino is now, it used to be the Rivergate, which was a big skate spot for us. And while they were building the aquarium, we'd go on the steps there, and just any parking lot we could find, pretty much.
Cool, man. I ledges. Used to be a rollerblader whenever that was a thing. You never see anybody rollerblading on this side of the road anymore, but back in the 90s, yeah, it was pretty cool to see somebody come by with their wrist guards and their helmets on. And I used to go out to Airline Drive. I can't remember the name of that rink, but we would play roller hockey and all sorts of stuff. Anyway, we're probably boring our listeners. Let's get talking. I'm going to bury the lead a bit on Frank Jackson, and let's start with Jrue Holiday, because as exciting as the NBA draft and the Tim Frazier trade and the Chris Finch and Sam Mitchell hirings have been, the number one offseason storyline is still Jrue Holiday and his future. And I feel like the Pelicans have benefited greatly on other squads around the NBA, picking up D'Angelo Russell's, Chris Dunn's in Chicago, the 76ers traded up for Markel Fultz, and the Lakers now have Lonzo Ball. Everybody is getting their point guards, Dennis Smith and Dallas Mavericks. How do you think, Kevin, that's going to affect how much the Pelicans are able to secure Jrue Holiday going forward? Or do you think he still leaves?
It's really tough. Like, I think in theory, it should make it easier to keep him here because a lot of the markets have dried up. But just from it's just sort of a gut feeling. I'm still not confident that he's coming back, even though we can offer, you know, more money, more years, which we'd probably end up overpaying just to keep him anyway. But if you've read, I wrote a 3-part series called Shooting is Overrated, which is kind of a tongue-in-cheek title, but about a full off-season plan. And I find Drew Holiday to be very critical to keeping our defensive identity going, which is really where his value comes in. But yeah, like you said, I mean, a lot of those teams got their young point guards, and I don't see them like trying to get a stopgap of Drew Holiday's quality with what he seems to be wanting contract-wise. And I don't see them giving him a lot of years if he is just supposed to be a stopgap. And I think he wants years in security. So in theory, he should be a guy that would be coming back. But when you look at his offseason moves, getting a new agent and just sort of not ever really saying that he wanted to stay or showing any indication that he was really interested in being here, you know, it still makes it a little bit worrisome.
Yeah, definitely. But with that being said, should he walk and the worst should happen? Now, of Kyle Lowry, George Hill, Jeff Teague, Patty Mills, other than Chris Paul, who I think stays in Los Angeles and signs that mega max $200 million deal, do you see any of these point guards, Drew Holiday being included, getting max level dollars over 4 years?
I think last offseason sort of scared some teams straight. You know, they're not going to reach on contracts. We see a lot of people dumping contracts from last year that they just signed. You know, you look at the Lakers sending D'Angelo Russell over with the Mozgov contract, things like that, you know, remorse. And then with the cap dropping because of, you know, the Warriors' effect on the playoffs, it, you know, I don't see a lot of teams spending that kind of money on a player of Drew Holiday's stature. You know, I mean, I think Kyle Lowry has a bigger name. You know, he's been in the playoffs more. He's more in the spotlight. So he might be a guy that would get it. I don't see, you know, Hill or Teague or Drew getting that unless Drew gets it from us.
Definitely. Cap space is more valuable this year than ever. Coupled with the $2 million we lost as a result of the low playoff ratings, the cap now sits at $99 million. So every team around the NBA lost $2 million with which to work. And that brings me to the NBA draft. And before we get to Frank Jackson, let's precurse it with the Tim Frazier trade. He was on the books for a little over $2 million this year. Do you think this was strictly a cap-saving move, or do you think the Pelicans really didn't see a future with Tim Frazier going forward? They did start him at point guard for 35 games last year, including most of the second half of the season, or at least the post-DeMarcus Cousins time of year, post-All-Star break. What do you think about that trade, and why do you think the Pelicans pulled the trigger?
You know, I'm a Frazier fan. I liked him a lot, but I didn't hate this move, even just in a vacuum. But I think we don't really know what the full plan is yet, so it's hard to really grade or judge this move at all at the moment, because I'm sure they have a lot, you know, it's sort of probably like a choose your own adventure novel where they like have this one thing and then there's two or three options they can choose from next that they have plans for, just seeing how things fall. But Frazier was in the last year of his deal. He wasn't going to come back next year. They weren't going to bring him back. You know, I don't see that happening. And with the cap dropping, needing maybe another roster spot, getting a second pick, which they probably intended on picking somebody with, but we can talk about that later. But I think the guy that they wanted went ahead of their pick. So they ended up selling it off. But it gives them still like flexibility to do other things. You know, you're going to have to bring, if you bring Holiday back, you're going to be over the cap. You got a few options you can work with cap wise to bring in guys, and every cent matters. And with Quinn Cook, Jordan Crawford, possibly Drew or another Drew replacement, and Boogie ball handling, Tim Frazier's skills weren't necessarily needed, especially since he didn't provide you anything on defense or much in the way of scoring.
Yeah, pretty much the most important thing he did was protect the ball. He averaged one turnover or less for the majority of the season. And that was the reason that Alvin Gentry let him engineer the offense towards the end. Does the trade, I think, is a wonderful trade. I'm very surprised we were able to get a second round pick for him at all and get rid of his $2 million when its cap space is, like we said, more crucial than ever. But does the timing of the trade make you a little bit nervous? If we knew that we were getting an immediate contributor in the second round who could come in and pilot the offense, I think I would be a little bit more sell. But now knowing that Drew Holiday is still on the fence, Frank Jackson looks to be a red shirt. We'll get to Jackson in a second. Does the timing of the trade make you a bit nervous, or do you think they pulled the trigger at the right time?
It doesn't make me nervous because, like I said, I don't think Frazier was a long-term plan there. And you have guys on the roster that can come in and play that position. You know, you have Quinn Cook, who I think they're pretty high on, who is not as dynamic of a playmaker. Like, Tim Frazier was a really good passer. But he's a better shooter and a better scorer, which fits the system better, possibly. And also, you know, when I interviewed Jamal, I keep saying Jamal, Jordan Crawford. I interviewed Jordan Crawford earlier this offseason, and he said that one of the big emphases was him getting to run the offense. So I think they have a lot of ideas of using him more as a point guard this year as well. So I think Tim Frazier just, you know, he was going to fall out of the rotation and wasn't going to be around long term. So if you could get a second round pick for him, that's great.
Yeah, I agree. The return was very good. And obviously with the Chris Finch hiring, they're planning to give the ball to DeMarcus Cousins for the majority of possessions anyway. You still need somebody to bring the ball up the floor, somebody who can hold on to it without careless turnovers. And for the most part, Michael Jordan Crawford, as they like to call him at Bourbon Street Shots, did a pretty good job of ball control in the limited time that we had him. Not to keep going on Tim Frazier, because honestly, he's not that important to our long-term future. But in the games that we did have him last season, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he posted over 50% shooting. I think it was 13 points, six assists and five rebounds, something like that. And obviously it was enough to give him a four-year, $1 million deal. He obviously was not as successful this year with a larger workload. So we'll see going forward if that was a sophomore slump kind of scenario or if that is Tim Frazier's career going forward. But let's get to the draft. We buried the lead, so to speak. Now let's get to Frank Jackson. He's in the midst of recovering from surgery in May to a stress reaction. Apparently he wasn't experiencing any pain. If he was able to play the entire season without experiencing pain, do you know why the surgery was necessary?
You know, I don't really know. I'm not going to pretend to understand the medical side of those things, but I'm not overly concerned with it. I mean, they expect him to be ready for July. I mean, he misses summer league, which is a bummer, but he'll be there for training camp. And he's not, I mean, let's face it, he's not a guy you're really planning on playing big minutes this year anyway. So, you know, you can bring him along slowly. And I don't think it's like a Drew Holiday situation when he came here. You know, I mean, they didn't know that Drew had his injury when he got here. And they know that Frank Jackson has this problem. So I'm sure it was thoroughly investigated and vetted. And, you know, I really am not concerned about the injury at all.
Okay. That's good to hear. Although we will miss him in summer league. It reeks eerily similar to Cheick Diallo, a guy who didn't get much playing time at Kansas in this instance at Duke, playing behind Grayson Allen and Luke Kennard. So he's got a lot of learning to do. Doesn't have a lot of big game experience. And what Mike Schmitz on Draft Express is calling him is a powerful and explosive leaper, 42-inch vertical. They call him a slasher, perimeter scorer, not a great defender, not a lot of lateral quickness, disengaged on defense from time to time. Just from reading this, and I also understand that he was the McDonald's 2017 dunk champion. It might have been 2016. Does this sound a lot like Zach LaVine to you?
I can see that. I mean, I think he's I don't remember Zach LaVine's shooting numbers coming out of college, but I think that Frank Jackson is probably a better shooter than Zach LaVine was coming out of college. I don't know that he's a better playmaker than not that Zach LaVine was a great playmaker, but I think that's, you know, if you're projecting Frank Jackson to be a ball handler, playmaker for you, I think that's a problem. But I don't really see him being that, honestly. I see him really as playing the two-guard role, but maybe defending the smaller guard when he's on the court, you know. But the thing that's great about him is he adds athleticism to a backcourt that was pretty lacking in it, you know, to be honest. I mean, Drew Holiday's not a great attacker, not a great leaper. Etuan Moore, who I'm a huge fan of, is not like a star athlete, you know. So adding a guy with some athleticism is great. And one thing that I also like a lot about him is his cutting abilities and his drives. You know, I think he fits what we've seen from Chris Finch's system, you know, off ball cuts, drives, handoffs, and, you know, spotting up for jump shots, playing off of a point center. So I think, you know, he's going to fit that role well. I mean, and again, like you said, it is very Diallo-like. It's a guy who was projected to go somewhere in the 20s that we ended up getting in the second round. So, you know, that's really good value for the pick for Dell there again.
Was he on your radar at all going into the second round with the 40th and 52nd overall picks? Or were you looking when we traded up for a Frank Mason or even one of the Bell brothers from Oregon type player?
You know, I'm not like a huge college basketball guy, honestly. Like if pros are on at the same time as college basketball, I'm never watching college basketball. Like I'll watch the worst pro basketball game because, you know, I want to watch the best of the best anyway. But so I wasn't super familiar with Frank Jackson, honestly, till very recently. I started to dig into him. So he wasn't necessarily on my radar. No, but, you know, we're guys I was looking at as like Hart or, you know, Morris, those kind of players. So he was a little bit of a surprise. But once I started looking into him, I see why he was the choice and why he is probably a good fit for this team and the scheme they want to run.
Yeah, and it looks to be that Dell Demps has been watching him for quite a while. It says that he attended some of his workouts over a year ago, as well as the guy that they picked up for their summer league team. I've got his name under here somewhere. I think it's Peter Zock. Is that right?
Peter Zock. Yeah.
Were you surprised that we traded away the 52nd overall pick? Most people are excited that we kind of packaged the two picks to move up to 31st, because obviously the 40th to the 31st pick, which was the Charlotte Hornets, that I believe they acquired in the Atlanta Hawks trade. We traded up that 9 spots for cash considerations, and then we gave away the 52nd overall pick also for cash consideration. So in all essence, we traded both picks to move up 9 spots, which I believe last year we had, I believe, the 39th and 40th, and we moved up to 33. So we moved up even further this year with the 52nd overall pick than we did having two picks back-to-back last year. Were you disappointed that we gave away the 52nd pick?
I wouldn't say I was disappointed. I mean, I think if Monty Morris would have lasted, he got picked the pick right before 52, I think they probably would have taken him just to have another like point guard potential player on the roster. But I think once he was gone, it, you know, after that, it's all guys that could maybe you could find comparable guys, you know, undrafted, and then they're not guaranteed or they fit the two-way contract model. So you give yourself some more flexibility and roster space and cap space. So I didn't mind it, you know. I mean, you're picking 52. It's very rarely you're going to strike gold anyway, you know.
Yeah, honestly, even at 31, it's a long shot that we'll get an immediate contributor. But talk about the NBA draft in general. I'm going to get to how this is going to affect the Pelicans. But what things sort of surprised you in the first round of the draft last night, and what did you not expect?
Well, I mean, I didn't expect Jimmy Butler to get traded for so little, you know. I mean, that was just, you know, I made the joke that, like, for the Timberwolves when they picked, was that 16th or 17th with that Bulls pick, they're going to give the player a ski mask instead of a hat to wear, you know. It was a robbery.
Yeah, highway robbery. That was surprising, and that was the big overriding storyline. One of the other ones was the Kings trading back from 10 to 15 and 20 when they still had Malik Monk on the board. Were you at all surprised they didn't want to pair the two Kentucky boys together in Fox and Monk in Sacramento with Buddy Hield?
Not really. I mean, because you got, you know, they have Hield at the two already. So I think they were, you know, I think the Kings had a really good draft, actually. You know, they did some pretty good moves, filled out some spots, have a pretty interesting young team now.
Yeah. All right, let's see some other ways that the NBA draft affected the Pelicans in terms of free agency and the draft going forward. I was looking at teams like the Chicago Bulls. Now they have Chris Dunn coming to town. I have to think there's not a lot of future there for Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade. You've got Donovan Mitchell going to the Jazz. This might spell the end for players like Rodney Hood or Shelvin Mack. Anunoby in Toronto, maybe spelling the end of PJ Tucker. The Blazers bringing in Zach Collins. They traded up to get him with the Kings. Now, maybe that could spell the end for Noah Vonleh, who would actually fit nicely into the Pelicans trade exception. Were you excited by any of the draft picks taken last night in terms of what it could mean to that respective team's roster going forward for the Pelicans?
Well, I'd say a little bit. I mean, I think you're still going to see some guys on the move. I think the Timberwolves are still trying to shop Rubio, which could possibly be somebody that we get if Holiday bolts, but it's going to take some maneuvering to move some contracts, which I don't know how that would all work out. Also, you know, the Suns with Bledsoe, I mean, I don't see him as a part of their long-term plans. They're going younger, which is a guy that I really like. I mean, I would take Bledsoe over Holiday any day, and he's, you know, probably going to be a good $7 to $10 million cheaper per year for the next couple of years. I was kind of surprised that the Magic didn't really address a point guard situation, because they've never really seemed to be sold on Elfrid Payton, but they have like a new GM in there, and maybe he thinks differently. But he's a guy that I always thought could be a nice piece, maybe for the Pelicans as a reserve point, or if Holiday does bolt, because he slides right into that Buddy Hield trade exception. I feel like the Spurs kind of replaced Patty Mills last night. I don't think they're looking to bring him back, and I worry about that, because I think that's a guy that the Pelicans are targeting, and I don't necessarily trust Patty Mills. Like, I feel like he's one of those Spurs guys that, you know, looks great in the system. Like, remember Marco Bellinelli looked great as a Spur, you know, and I just worry about counting on a guy like that, giving him a good contract and, you know, him sort of flaming out. Other guys like Jonathan Jackson going to Phoenix, maybe TJ Warren becomes available. If the Spurs make a hard run at Paul George, maybe you can pry away Jonathan Simmons. But I kind of think that if they do get Paul George, they're going to try to field Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and a Jonathan Simmons, like, trio that would be incredibly defensively and be very troubling for us. But, other than that, you know, like, the main thing that happened in the draft is Holiday's options kind of dried up a little bit. So, as I joked about him demanding a high contract and kind of the rumors that he's demanding that his brother come with him, he's going to have to go like revise his ransom letter, you know, and just maybe eat a little crow and come back. Hopefully, we'll see.
Definitely. Do you trust Dell Demps at that negotiating table? We've already seen him overpay for free agents like Ashiq to bring him back. And in a similar instance to this, because he had just traded a first round pick, much in the same vein that he gave two for Drew Holiday, and he still overpaid him when the market was not set to give him that 5-year deal. Do you think that Dell Demps still overpays Drew Holiday? And if so, what do you think he throws at him?
I think he does, you know, but the thing is, it's like, you say that he's overpaying him, but when you look at it, like, who else can you really get? Because without going over the cap to sign Holiday, you can't use these other mid-level exemptions and all of these things that you can use to get other players. You need to be over the cap, and then there's not much in the way of point guards in the trade market that are going to be cheap enough that you can slide into your your roster without, you know, cap problems or having to dump another contract. The only guy I can really think of that I would be interested in is Elfrid Payton, that, you know, would slide into that healed trade exception.
Yeah, I definitely think we'd have to get creative as far as bringing in a point guard, somebody like, I don't know why Sean Livingston would ever want to leave Golden State with what he's got going there. I would assume he'd even re-sign at the minimum if he had to. But some players who I was thinking about is possibly packaging like a lottery protected pick for a player, maybe like a Jeremy Lin, bringing in a Shelvin Mack, I'm sure would really relish having the starter's minutes. No matter where he goes from Atlanta to Utah, he can't seem to crack any floor time. And when he does, he produces at a pretty impressive clip. Not that he's going to make an all-star team or anything, but he could be a stopgap player for a year or so if we gave him a $5 million contract. And then after that, it would have to be trades. It would have to be packaging those future picks that everybody assumes Dell Demps is going to give away at any juncture going forward anyway. But you are right. Bringing back Jrue Holiday is the most logical option. I'm just terrified that we're going to overpay him. I think as the market is set right now, I don't think anybody offers him a four-year deal at more than $18 million a year. Do you?
I mean, I could see that being a deal for him. But again, it's like one of those things where I think we're gonna pay him probably a little bit more than that. I think about $20 million is probably what we're gonna get him. But again, you know, it's what you need to do to keep the roster where it is. And also, Holiday is such a huge part of what we do defensively. That's really his value. So you're taking the ball handling out of his hands with, you know, Boogie being the main ball handler when they're on the court together. But, you know, defense is, I mean, that's what kept us afloat close to, you know, being in the playoff talk this whole year. So we improve on offense and we maintain that level of defense. We should be solid, and paying to keep Jrue is worth it, I think. I don't know.
Where these point guards go will be the number one story this offseason, at least in New Orleans. And let me ask you one more question before I move on from Jrue Holiday. So we've got free agency coming up in a week, and obviously we need to bring Jrue back. But should some point guards start to fall, let's say Jeff Teague and George Hill are off the market, and all you've got left really are Kyle Lowry and Patty Mills, Chris Paul's going to re-sign. How many days go by before you give up on Drew's free agent search and you just pay whoever you can?
Well, I think you got to go in right away with like you said, maybe like a $16 to $18 million offer, see where they're at. I mean, I'm sure they've already been engaged in talks, you know, behind the scenes, but see where they're at, give them a couple of days to get some feelers out there, and then maybe by, you know, day five or something, if you can't work out something, then you move on to plan B. And, you know, I'm not sure what that is, but if it were me, I'd probably, the first thing I would do is see what I could do to get Eric Bledsoe. And if I couldn't get Eric Bledsoe, I would just try to get Elfrid Payton.
Yeah. Gentry was quoted as saying he's our priority, make no mistake about it. But you also, as a business, it's not any different than anything else. You look at the situation, you have to have a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C, and maybe Eric Bledsoe falls under that plan B or C. Let's move on, transition. I want to talk about one of your previous articles. It was one of the darkest times to be a Pelicans fan from this previous season. We had a couple of those, but on March 9th, the Pelicans had just completed the trade for DeMarcus Cousins. I think we were 2-6 post Boogie trade at the time. We were not playing well. Boogie was settling at the 3-point line on every transition possession. And you came out with an article talking about Becky Hammon as the new Pelicans head coach, which was very interesting, not just because she's been under the Spurs umbrella, Hall of Fame type player, and what it would mean for New Orleans, how exciting that would be, how much interest that would generate. Do you still give a vote of confidence to Alvin Gentry and Dell Demps going forward, or are you still investigating a life post Gentry now that we've brought in Chris Finch and Sam Mitchell? Just talk about all the hirings and how you stand with the Pelicans front office right now.
The way I feel about it right now is we have two superstars. So in the NBA, coaching is not as important as in other sports. You know, if you have a good roster, it can overcome a bad coach. You know, you won't reach your full potential, but you'll still be a quality team because of just the nature of the game. That being said, I still am not a fan of Alvin Gentry's. I just don't think he's a great coach. I mean, you look at his plays out of timeouts last year, they're atrocious. You know, he's the offensive mastermind and offense is in the tank. I don't have a lot of trust in him, but what I find interesting is I feel like neither does the team, but they're putting on this whole sort of facade. It's kind of like the Wizard of Oz, where, you know, we're not firing Alvin Gentry because of that whole idea that DeMarcus Cousins has had so many coaches in his career and we want to show we're not dysfunctional, but we basically completely neutered him. You know, he already had a defensive coordinator. Now you're bringing in Chris Finch to be the offensive coordinator and totally changed the way the offense was run. So in a sense, he's just managing game flow right now, you know, lineups, when to call a timeout, those kind of things, it seems like to me. So I feel like they sort of, in a way, got rid of him, but still kept him in a way that makes it seem like there's continuity. There's not, you know, the coaching staff isn't in flux. And then you have, you know, I think next year is like a team option on him. He's going to be in his late 60s, right? So, you know, they could just be like, okay, it's time to pass the torch on to this new guy, whether it's Ehrman or Finch, or, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be Finch, but then they can do that sort of under the guise of just, you know, he's retiring off into the pastures and we built this continuity. Everything's flowing well. There's no drama like Cousins had in Sacramento, and it accomplishes both goals in a way.
That's what I was going to say. A lot of really great points there, and coaching does matter. I was going to argue with Eric Spoelstra and Rick Carlisle often bringing the best out of their you'd have to say they're not the most talented teams in the league, but they often perform like they are. And now Alvin Gentry has this almost all-star lineup of assistant coaches. Like you said, Chris Finch, we brought in Sam Mitchell to be our new Robert Pack, our sort of a cheerleader or guy who garners respect, the gladiator speech giver. And then you've got Darren Ehrman. You've got your offensive defensive coordinator, and then you've got the guy that the players actually listen to. So he is surrounded by so many powerful voices. It'll be interesting to see how he commands the respect of the team going forward, but he seems like an all-around likable guy, like a player's coach. Everybody gets along with him. DeMarcus Cousins talked about how meaningful it was having he and Dell Demps on the plane with him on the ride back to New Orleans after he had just flown back to Sacramento, funny enough. Quickly, let me just get your take on the Sam Mitchell hiring. Obviously, he had a difficult run of things in Minnesota in his last stop, but he did get a very strong vote of confidence from Kevin Garnett. And we might even experience a Kevin Garnett sighting this offseason, being that they're such close personal friends and Garnett likes to make offseason stops at different camps. Do you think there's any chance that we bring Garnett to New Orleans in sort of a celebrity guest coach type role? And what do you think of the Mitchell hiring?
You know, I wasn't really floored by the Mitchell hiring. I don't mind it. You know, I don't mind having extra voices in there. I don't like the idea that if, you know, something were to happen and they do fire Gentry, that he would be the guy to take over. I'd prefer to see either Finch or Ehrman get a shot at that. But as far as, like, the whole notion of him bringing in Kevin Garnett as a, you know, a consultant or whatever you want to call him, I like that idea, obviously, especially, you know, him working with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. That'd be great. But my thoughts were, when that happened and everybody was saying that was the reason to hire him, is just like, why not just hire Kevin Garnett? Like, the Warriors hired Steve Nash. You know, he's like a part-time consultant, comes in every now and then. He's not full-time with the team. He can still do his TV things, you know, can still be away, come in a couple weeks during the season, you know, work with the team, those kind of things. But I don't hate the move. It's, you know, it's fine. It's another guy, another voice, a guy with experience, a guy who's been known to, like, motivate people, even if he wasn't, like, sort of a great X's and O's coach. So, I'm fine with it.
All right. Coming up next month, July 7th through the 17th, we've got the Orlando Summer League. And the Pelicans will be rolling out with Cheick Diallo, Quinn Cook, Axel Toupin. You'd have to think Peter Zoch will be among the guys there. And in case listeners don't know, I actually live in Orlando, Florida. Any chance we see any of the Bird Rights cast out here watching basketball this summer?
I don't think so. We potentially, for a while, Ollie and I were possibly going to the Vegas Summer League. But then it kind of fell through, but and he couldn't go, and I decided not to go because I have some other things coming up that I need to focus on. But I don't think that anybody's going to be out there for us. But SB Nation will certainly be out there, you know, covering things.
All right. Well, if you guys change your mind, look me up. And I was going to say Las Vegas Summer Leagues. Rick Stone, our previous editor, told me a few months ago that he was planning on making the trip. So in case you guys head up there, we should link the two of you guys. Before I let you go, it's summer movie season. Are you big into summer movies at all?
I'm kind of picky about movies. So I'm not really into like the big blockbusters usually. So not so much.
Oh, well, you just quelled my excitement. Never mind. We'll move right along.
Sorry,
we'll talk about what you guys
I'm always open.
Was that?
It's something to me. I might go check it out, you know?
All right. Well, I'm a big Spider-Man fan, and we've still got Planet of the Apes coming out in this new book that my sister loves. It's called Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets. I don't know what it's about, but it's done by the same guy who did The Fifth Element, Luc Besson. I don't know how to pronounce his name. I hope I didn't just butcher it. You've got Atomic Blonde, the new superhero agent movie starring, what's her name? I can't remember it. This is really impressive podcast radio right now. But I'll let you go. Talk a bit about what the Bird Rights has coming up in the upcoming weeks.
Well, today we posted our draft grade roundtable. That's up. And Ollie posted a pretty good profile on Peter Joke, which, you know, people should check out because he's probably a guy that we don't know a lot about, most people, but he seems like an intriguing prospect. You know, he's 6'6 at the two. He's got comps to Klay Thompson in terms of his catch and shoot ability and Bradley Beal for his use of screens. So, you know, that's something to look into. Obviously going undrafted, you know, he has holes in his game, but if you have one elite skill in this league and that skill is shooting and you're 6'6", 2, you know, there's potential for you to, you know, stick around, at least get into some rotations. So I'm pretty intrigued by checking him out in summer league and, you know, in the preseason. And then other than that, you know, once free agency starts rolling, we'll be hitting some things. I did, you know, like I said, my shooting is overrated, three-part plan earlier in the season, which pretty much everything is still at play because it wasn't really hinging much on this year's draft, knowing that at the time we only had one second round pick. So those are things that people could look at if they're interested in my thoughts on how the offense and the roster could be developed and how the pieces we have already fit into what should be a new offense.
Sounds good, Kevin. Thank you so much for your time. Again, listeners, this is at Kevin B for Bounce. He writes for thebirdrights.com. Kevin, thank you so much for your time, man.
Thank you, Preston.
Thank you again to Kevin, and thank you again to Ollie Cassell and the guys at thebirdrights.com. Make sure you go over there, check out all their latest and upcoming material. Thank you to the guys at the Bourbon Street Shots. They're such great supporters. The whole community of Pelicans writers have really been welcoming, wonderful people. So thank you to all of them. The guys at Saints Nation, the guys at Times-Picayune, Scott Kushner, D. Scott Alexander, all such a wonderful and gracious people, not a competitive nature at all. So I just want to say thank you to all of them. And thank you again to you. My name is Preston Ellis. Follow me at Preston Ellis. If you like what you're hearing, go to iTunes, rate us, hit subscribe, share with your friends. We really appreciate all of your support. We are just fans here at fansided.com, and we just love talking basketball. That's the reason that we do it. We're by no means experts. So if you guys have some input or some stuff that you would like to hear us talk about from the fan side, please write under PrestonEllis.com on Twitter, and I promise promise you we will have all of your questions up on the next podcast. I'd be happy, really thrilled to answer them. So again, thank you guys. Just in case Elizabeth is listening, happy birthday to you. I doubt that she is. And stay tuned. We've got free agency coming up. Orlando's Summer League is coming up next month. I live in Orlando. I'm going to try to secure some credentials so that I can talk to you guys about the daily happenings of the performances of Cech Diallo, Axel Tupan, Peter Joke, Quinn Cook. It'll be really fun to see those guys in action. Maybe we'll even see some other sightings, like maybe Frank Jackson on the bench or some Dell Demps sightings. But for now, thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon. Let's go, Pels.